You are listening to the Hodges Huddle, where we discuss all things in the wide world of sports. Here's your KLSU sports team.
Welcome into the Hodges Huddle. I'm your host, Andre Champagne, and today I am joined by the great Jaden Smith and the great Anthony Bradham. What's up, guys?
What's going on, man?
What is it?
I
look forward to this moment every
single
day.
It's a calm little Tuesday.
Hey!
Calm little Tuesday.
Not just any calm Tuesday, but the NBA playoffs are finally underway, as many games have occurred since our time of recording. We are going to briefly go through our predictions before we get to the NFL draft this week. Mm-hmm. This is one of my favorite weeks ever.
Yeah, and it's definitely a fun, like, there's a lot of stuff that crosses over in the world of sports around this time that only happens once a year.
Yeah.
Like, it's always a special week when you get the draft and everything that comes with that.
Yep.
All those guys getting their opportunities. The NBA playoffs, like we said, are picking up steam, and we're barreling towards the finals already. So, yeah, man, it's definitely fun.
And then the NFL draft just seems like to be more fun when LSU is so heavily involved in it, like they will be this year. But what do you think? Yeah. You big fan of the NFL draft?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just going to be another year where LSU puts a lot of talent into the NFL. And it's just so cool to look at, man.
It is.
I mean, year in and year out, LSU is one of those schools you can always count on. I want to say the stat may have changed since the last time I saw it, but I saw a stat that, like, LSU and Bama are the only schools that could field a 53-man NFL roster.
Yeah, that is so cool.
Their players.
Yeah, and
I would assume that Ohio State could
probably do that too.
I agree.
Maybe USC, but, like, Alabama and LSU, you could fill a 53 just from the year 2000. Like, how good those two programs have been in the last 25 years. So it's definitely it's the path. It's all the branding, NFLSU, that whole thing. It's real. It's a real thing.
It is. And so let's get into the NBA playoffs. We're going to start with the Eastern Conference side of the playoffs. First off, the Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat. This one should be pretty short. Who wins this series and in how many games? And I guess just why.
Yeah, I think Boston's going to get the sweep. I just think they're a little bit too much for Miami. I know the memes about Jimmy Butler and the power of friendship. Well, now you just have the power of friendship and no Jimmy Butler.
Right.
I just think that Boston's too much for them. I got them in four games.
Okay. Yeah, same here. Boston just pretty much played with their food the last time out. It only got close because they let it get close.
Yeah, they were resting.
And like Anon said, Miami just doesn't have it this year. It's just a sad case, but Boston in four.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you guys. Boston Celtics, and this will not be a curse, by the way. All the time that we have three.
There probably will be some cursing later in this episode.
But this will not be one.
But this won't be one.
I have Boston in four games. I think this year is different for Boston, especially with the addition of Kristaps Porzingis and Jrue Holiday. I love those guys.
Yeah.
And I love the role that they play on this team. Like I said, Boston in four. One of the more interesting matchups, the Knicks and 76ers. That's been a really physical series so far, and really close games where, you know, it really came down to one or two plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think playing it in Philadelphia is going to change this series a lot. I think the first two games being in the Garden, we know what kind of atmosphere the Garden has when it's playoff time and it's time to be loud and be counted for. Mm-hmm. The Knicks fans are a great fan base, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I think that home crowd has carried them to the first two games. I think the story changes when we get to Philadelphia, but I do have the Knicks in six games.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the Knicks in six as well, just because I think down the stretch of the games, they've shown the ability to make more of the plays that end up making the difference.
Yeah.
I do think Philadelphia is going to be able to get back into this series, but there's too many factors as to why I don't think they'll get over the hump.
Right.
Obviously, Joel Embiid is clearly not 100%.
Yeah.
He's just that good that he can still put up 34 and 11.
It's insane.
Right. And also, I'm looking for Jalen Brunson to play a lot better in Philadelphia, because I will say this, if he continues to shoot like the way he's been shooting the past two games, they can find themselves in trouble.
Yeah. I actually completely agree with you. And I still have the Knicks in seven here.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that the Philly faithful, like Andon said, are they're going to make an impact in,
yeah.
in this series. But I think the chemistry to the Knicks team is it's a big reason to their success. And these are all players that give so much effort you know, in an, each night in and out. But I think Jalen Brunson, like you said, is going to have to start to heat up in yeah. the series. And that's kind of a testament to how good the Knicks are playing with him yeah. being so, you yeah. know, bad right now. Right, right, so
yeah, I'd just before we yeah. move on, I'd like to give a shout out to Josh Hart because that great. Dude is one of the unsung heroes. He was yeah. Objectively a joke in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and he went to New Orleans, played really well with the Pelicans, went to the Blazers in the CJ McCollum trade, mm-hmm. and got himself a big payday with New
yep.
York.
Yep.
And the dude is worth every penny of it because he is absolutely outstanding. Yeah. He fits the city of New York perfectly the same way he fit the city of New Orleans perfectly.
Just very gritty player.
He's a hard yeah. worker. He's gritty. He has this attitude about him. Right. I love Josh Hart, man.
Josh Hart would be the one guy you want to go into battle with.
Right? I agree. I've always enjoyed Josh Hart on the Pelicans. And I knew when they didn't bring him back, you kind of knew that he was going to go and find a very good role on another team. And he was going to go make an immediate impact. So it's really cool to see him finally getting the appreciation that he deserves.
Yeah.
But moving on, the Bucks and the Pacers. This is also, I think game two is tonight, right?
Game two tonight. We are recording this on Tuesday. Yep. So the game twos tonight are Minnesota Phoenix, which we'll get to.
Right.
Dallas Los Angeles game two. Los Angeles Clippers, and then Bucks Pacers. I said on the show that I think the Pacers were going to upset the series.
Yeah.
After watching game one, I don't feel the same way about that. I just don't think that they have the firepower that I thought that they did. And we've seen a lot in this playoffs, teams that come in with a lot of momentum come in and don't shoot very well. Orlando is a good example of that. We'll get to them. Yep. Even the Pelicans are a good example of that. I just think that Milwaukee has a little bit too much experience, and yeah. I'm going to go back on my upset pick. I'm going to say Bucks in five games.
Okay.
Yeah, Anna and I are kind of the same in this because I think we both picked Indiana to upset the Bucks on the Sunday show. But I'd have to change my mind, too. And a big reason of that is just because two big reasons. One, Damian Lillard didn't waste any time. He got right
yeah.
to it.
Yeah.
It's playoff time.
34 and one half.
And you already know what time it is when it comes to Dame. Yeah. And the second reason is Tyrese Halliburton finished the game with 9 points, yeah. in which they had plenty of time to cut back into the lead, in which they really did.
Yeah, they did.
But he just was not a factor of that. And I think in order for them to upset Milwaukee, Tyrese Halliburton is going to have to play good. He cannot afford to put up 12 assists with 6 points. So he's going to have to score the ball a lot more.
Yeah.
And this is even with Giannis being out. So I'm going to have to take Milwaukee in five, I would say. And that's being generous.
You don't win playoff games being Rajon Rondo.
Right.
When your team relies on you to score, you need to score. Assists yeah. are nice. They're very important. They're very valuable. That means you're setting your teammates up for buckets. But when you're the guy, you yeah. got to score like the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's honestly, after the All-Star break, you just slow down. It was yeah. so weird to see. But just with the amount of experience that this Bucks team has, and it's not only just experience, but it's championship experience. They have so many yes. guys from the finals team still there, and they know what it takes to beat kind of a you know younger team like this. But with that, I'm going to say the Bucks in six games.
You got them going. You were the only guy to predict them to win on the Sunday show, yeah. and now you've got the series going the longest.
I do think it goes long.
No Diddy.
Yeah, no Diddy. I do something tells me with the way that Miles Turner and then the way that Tyrese Halliburton played.
Yeah,
it can't get worse than that.
It
really
get any
can't
worse than that.
You would hope it doesn't get worse yeah. than that, but it definitely could.
It definitely could, dude.
There have been some bad offensive sets. I've tried to watch as much of this playoffs as I can so far.
Yeah.
There have been some really, really bad offensive sets that I've seen some teams run, and the shooting has just not been.
Yeah.
Like, dude, the Pelicans lost by two, and neither yeah. team scored 100 points.
Yeah.
Like, that is – I think the commentator said it was like the 90s.
Yeah.
It was like a 90s playoff game, the way yeah. the teams were shooting and the way the defense was being played. I just don't – like,
right.
in a league where scoring is at a premium, you have to score in these types of games.
I completely agree with that. And here's another part of my reasoning. I think that Damian Lillard is not going to go and score 34 every night.
Well, like, yeah.
I think that's,
he could. Well, we
can't expect and here's him the thing. To, if yeah. it happens, you can give me the poo-poo Broussard next week. But
yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, if, like, but Indiana is going to say that, look, if Dame's going to drop 40 on us every game, like,
we're going to make sure nobody else gets involved.
You know, if we lose and Damian Lillard drops 50, God bless him.
Yeah.
You know, like, good job, yeah, guys. Good job. You got us. But I think Indiana's, they're just not ready for it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to the Cavs and the Magic. This is honestly, this is one that we.
Ooh, it's another one where it was like, I had faith in Orlando, but I just said that Donovan Mitchell would be a little bit too much, yeah. and that kind of showed up. I think Orlando didn't shoot the ball well at all. That's another team where it just they couldn't get a bucket to drop, man.
Right, yeah.
And when you get to the playoffs and you go 4 minutes without a field goal, and you look up and you're down 12, and you're like, oh my God, what do we do now? When you're a young team, you don't react to that in the way you should. And I think that's what Orlando's struggling with. I said Cavs in five on the show. I think I'm going to stick with that. Mm-hmm. I just think Donovan Mitchell's a little too much, and the Magic are a little bit underbaked right now. Yeah. They'll be very good in the next couple of years, but right now is not their turn.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go Cavs in five. I do think they'll get like one of those pity wins at home. But yeah. I just think
they'll probably win game three just because the crowd in Orlando is going to be so behind.
It's been a long time since Orlando's had a playoff game.
Yeah, and especially it's not like any playoff game. I mean, they're the five seed. It's been a long time since they haven't been something other than the eight or seven seed. So that's a big deal for them. But I'm also going to agree. I'm going to say Cavs won in five games. But moving on to the Western Conference, we have the Thunder and the Pelicans. Now, are you sticking with your answer?
I said on the Sunday show, I'm not elaborating. I am going to elaborate this time. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stick with it, man. I'm going to say Pelicans in six games. I probably lean towards seven games after seeing what I saw in game one. I am probably the most confident Pelicans fan in the world right now after losing by two in game one, because that crowd was unbelievable.
Yeah, that's hard.
Oklahoma City made some very tough shots in key moments. Lou Dort and Jalen Williams played outstanding. They were absolute game wreckers all game. The only time that the Pelicans made positive runs on offense were when those two guys were off of the floor.
Yeah.
And I feel great because you lost by two and you shot the ball horribly. Brandon Ingram went 5 of 17. Herb Jones went 2 of 10.
Yep. And
Oklahoma City's not going to shoot that bad again.
Exactly.
But you won't either.
Yeah.
And I saw in this series what I was looking for on Sunday. If the Pelicans can take a physical fight to the Thunder, I don't think that the Thunder will react in the way that everybody thinks they will, and they didn't. They didn't. Chet Holmgren did not look very comfortable in that game. Neither did the other Jalen Williams, the one that went to Arkansas.
Yeah, he had some lucky – speaking of lucky shots –
but even SGA didn't look necessarily comfortable in that game. The only guys that adjusted to the physicality very well were J-Dub and Lou Dort, and they looked brilliant. I've been a huge fan of Lou Dort for years.
Aaron Wiggins. I'll say Aaron Wiggins
looked good as well. Yeah.
Aaron Wiggins,
but
the guy that...
outside of those guys, I think that the Pelicans are taking a fight to them that they're not necessarily ready for yet.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stick with the Pels in seven.
I said OKC was going to be food in the playoffs before the playoff picture was even set because of the physicality standpoint. I saw it in the regular season that when teams decide to play Oklahoma City physically, they do not respond well. They're a young team. They haven't figured out how to combat that. And SGA's game is mostly catered to contact. I can get to the free throw line, and from there, I'll find my rhythm.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get those types of calls in the playoffs, you're just not
going to
get
some
He got some calls, buddy.
But like I say, he plays like Dwayne Wade. That's who he reminds me of. Because D. Wade used to just throw his body around. This headset's giving me trouble.
Speaking of which, we thought that ever since Curry and Chris Paul did that, you know, throwing your body into – I thought that rule was banned. But
it
apparently
was banned
not,
for about 2 weeks.
Yeah, and then the viewings went down because the points weren't up. But –
He plays just like Dwayne Wade, man. He's like Dwayne Wade with passing skills. Like it's
really?
I think he plays just like him.
I think he's
I feel like
he's a guard that plays sort of like Paul George
the way
as, well,
as far as the way he uses his body, especially in isolation, reminds me a lot of Dwayne Wade, because D Wade would end up in a lot of those positions too, where he's ISOing you on the wing and he just the clock gets low. And he throws his body into you, and he either makes a tough shot because he's a great basketball player, or he gets a whistle, and he's, like you said, he's going to the line, and he's getting his rhythm.
I mean, I get it from that standpoint, but, so man, this man's nickname is Flash, bro. Like, I've never seen SGA and been like, super man, that guy's quick. Yeah. Like, man, how do you stay in front of him? But I do understand it from the standpoint
More of like an older D Wade might be a better. He doesn't play like young D Wade because young D Wade was quick, athletic, bouncy. I'm talking more like 2014, 2015 D Wade, where he's just ISO ball, using his body, being smart about the game. That's what he reminds me of.
Pelicans in seven.
Wow.
What?
Okay, here it comes, boys.
We just cursed
him. Here's the curse. I'm sticking with the Pels in seven. And like Andon said, you know, it's tough losing a game that felt like it was in your hands, especially on the road in such a hostile environment. That's really what kind of made me mad about this game. But the offense, I'm not really worried about. I'm not really worried about the offense in the series, especially they just need better production off the bench. And that's going to get better. Trust me, that is going to get better. I don't think the bench could have played any worse. Najee Marshall, I think, is going to have a very good comeback game on Wednesday. I think Jose Alvarado is going to get more involved in the offense. But here's what New Orleans has to do, and it's something that Andon said on the Sunday show this week.
Yeah.
You have to go to Jonas Valanciunas more. When he is on the court, he's dominating Chet.
That's a sentence.
He's the worst finisher on the floor.
Still.
The dude can't hit a layup to say, JV. And I said on the Sunday show, JV is the key to this series. Yeah. JV got like two offensive boards on one possession, had three layups, and didn't hit one of
them. But then kicked back to Trey Murphy. And like, it's just stuff like that. He dominated the board.
Absolutely.
And so you have to keep him in, especially when he's doing that well.
I don't know.
Against Chet.
I thought Nance played well.
I did too, but I think you have to match Chet and Jonas's minutes. I think you have to kind of. Similar to what
JV,
you did with.
I don't think JV can play as many minutes as Chet does. Chet played every game this year. Like the dude.
Yeah, I know.
The dude.
So did Jonas.
The dude has stamina. Like it's. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
But
that's why Willie Green makes the money and I don't.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
We got to ask ourselves that for how long will that be? But Nuggets, Lakers.
Nuggets in four.
last night was
after
just...
last night when Jamal Murray fades away, and they ask Anthony Davis. Well, yeah. I'm not gonna spoil that.
Which
but
was a horrible. What do you mean?
It was a bad question, but I'm not gonna spoil what AD said in the post game press conference because I think one of us is gonna touch on that later.
Yeah.
I just think that the Lakers are like. What do we do? Like, no matter what we do, how well we play, they had leads in both games, and Denver just...
I don't feel bad.
...stole it back from... Oh, I don't feel bad either, but it's
couldn't
like...
Couldn't be happening to a better team.
Yeah, it's just insane. I don't think they have an answer. I'm gonna go Nuggets in four. I just don't think that the Lakers have an answer for anything
appreciate
that Denver's doing right now.
Yeah, I'm going to say Nuggets in four as well.
Oh, wow.
I've never felt more – no, I take that back. I haven't felt this helpless against a certain team since the way I felt
last year,
2017, 2018, against Golden State. I've never felt more of, like you said, what are you supposed to do? I've never felt like – in a shot like that, losing a game like that, that takes a lot
out
of you, bro.
It affects
really
you big
does.
Time.
Like, and I'm sure there's at least one player in that locker room thinking, can we really beat these dudes, bro? Like, somebody said it's like the Nuggets get a rise out of watching the Lakers try their hardest, do everything
still,
they can to beat
still
them.
Still fall short.
And just reminding them, like, yeah, we're just better than you, bro. I don't see a way. Well, I mean, it's not over, I guess, but
I don't
that's
know,
just
bro.
Detrimental.
It feels over to me, dog. Like, if I'm a Lakers fan, I don't know what's going. I don't know up from down right now, man, because yeah, the Nuggets
Y'all are better than me. I put Nuggets in six. I really think that, you know, this Lakers team may have a lot of, you know, honestly, if that was our team, I'm quitting straight up. Like, that is absolutely just take the energy and the life out of us. You know, yeah. Let's move on to Cancun. You know, at least give me a good vacation out of this. But I don't know. I think LeBron says I'm not done yet. I think here's the crazy part. Austin Reeves' legacy game three.
Insane.
Call it right now. I still have the Nuggets in six. Like, one thing about Jokic, he didn't even look that good last night. Still had a triple-double. That's the craziest
him. He's the quietest triple-double the world. Right. Just because, like...
Since Westbrook.
I remember making this connection earlier in the season. I said, if you watch Nikola Jokic, you watch the entire Nuggets offense. It's like Sergio Busquets when he was at FC Barcelona. If you watch Sergio Busquets, you watch FC Barcelona because he is everywhere for them. And Nikola Jokic is everywhere. But if you don't watch him, they look great and you wouldn't even notice him on the field. But he is the reason that everything going on the field is happening the way it does. And Nikola Jokic is the same way. He's just brilliant.
Yeah, he's great. But moving on, we have Timberwolves Suns.
Sweep.
Really?
I thought Phoenix looked so disgustingly bad in game one against Minnesota. I think that their confidence is completely shot. When we got to the fourth quarter, Minnesota was well-rested and ready to attack, and Phoenix was exhausted. They cannot last in these games with Minnesota.
They have no depth.
I've got the Wolves in a sweep.
This guy does not agree.
I got the Wolves in six. I don't know about a sweep. It's one game. I'm not going to make a big deal out of one game. Now, they did look
awful.
Shook. Yeah. They looked like spooked. Like, oh, I didn't know y'all was coming like that. Yeah.
They also looked exhausted.
KD was laughing, and that scares me.
I thought that was a little cute moment.
I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah. Because, I mean, Anthony Edwards, that's his favorite player of all time. Yeah. And it's just kind of funny that he was talking.
That's life, man. But I just think, look, Kevin Durant came to play by himself on Saturday. And I'm expecting him to have a little bit more help in games two and three or the following games. But I think the job that Jaden McDaniels did on Devin Booker, holding him at 5 of 16 shooting, I think that's going to be a sign of more to come. I just think they just match up very well against Phoenix.
I've got the Timberwolves in six. I just think it's a depth thing. And I think, I mean, like, you look on the bench and the Timberwolves could put a whole other five there without their, you know, their stars, and they'd be honestly fine.
Can I say the Anthony Edwards line? You know, they got KD, but we got Jaden McDaniels. Jaden McDaniels is tough, bro. And it's just it's the depth that Minnesota has, like you mentioned, guys like Nikhil Alexander Walker, Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid. They're just give you such good minutes off the bench, and Phoenix doesn't have that. They played Eric Gordon for 21 minutes in game one. Yeah. That is not how you win NBA playoff games.
Garnett flow.
I know. I'm a Pelicans fan. I watched Eric Gordon play 40 minutes in a playoff game.
Painful.
It does. It's not good.
I watch Omer Asik play playoff minutes as a Pelican.
Like, bruh, Alexis Ajinsa. I know how important depth is when we get to the playoffs. And they have none, man. They have none. Yeah. They have nobody.
Right.
It's like they don't learn.
Yeah.
They've been doing this for years, and every year it's the same problem.
Yeah.
Ever since they traded for KD, it's been the same problem.
And they kind of knew what they were getting themselves into. I mean, they thought Nurkic was going to be their guy, but
they should have kept DeAndre Ayton.
They should have. But finally, we have the Clippers and the Mavericks.
I'm going to say Clippers, bro. Clippers in six. Okay. No, Clippers in five, actually.
Wow.
The way that they spanked Dallas in game one with no Kawhi, I mean from the opening tip, it was never a game. Dallas never looked like they were in the game. They never looked like they showed up to play. Now, granted, they didn't shoot the ball very well, and I don't think you can expect them to do that the rest of the series. But
yeah, they scored 8 points in the second quarter.
Yeah, I just think the Clippers are going to be too much for him.
Yep.
I picked Dallas to win the series originally because I was bought into the whole Luka thing and how he always plays well against the Clippers, but I just don't think it's going to be enough this go-around.
The Mavericks scored 30 points in the first half of an American basketball game. Yeah. They will not play that bad again. I'm still in on Luka. I'm still in on the Mavericks. I'm going to go Mavs in 7. I don't think that they'll play as bad as they did in game 1 3 more times. I don't think it's possible. The same way I don't think that all the other teams that I mentioned are going to shoot that bad again. I definitely don't think that Kyrie and Luka will do that again.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to shoot as bad, but the concern for me is the Dallas Mavericks just don't have enough depth. It's literally a depth issue, and the center play has definitely not helped them.
We should put up a counter for this episode on how many times we say the word depth.
I mean, that's really what the playoffs are starting to come down to.
Oh, absolutely.
But I'm going Clippers in 7. I do think this one goes the length, but I think when they lack guys that can go and get, you know, really big boards offensively, because Derek Lively was supposed to be that guy for the Mavericks, and he just hasn't.
Ivica Zubac.
He's not even 100% right now.
Ivica Zubac dominated that game, dude. Like, I was not expecting him to have the presence that he did. Right. Yeah.
But give me your updated finals teams and your champions, just really quick.
Jaden?
I'm going to go Celtics and Nuggets. They're the deepest teams in the league. Yeah. Battle-tested. They have the experience. They have the talent. I mean, it's
the coaching.
The coaching, I really just can't see any reason to bet against them.
Okay.
I'm going to go Boston, Denver, my champion, back-to-back the Denver Nuggets.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, champion.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Boston.
Boston's year. Okay. I have the Celtics, Timberwolves. I love the Timberwolves team right now. And I don't know why. Like I said, I just kind of like the way they're clicking right now. They're playing really good.
Completely unrelated note to what you're saying, but there's an NBA poll amongst all the players as to who the most overrated player in the NBA was, and number one by a landslide was Rudy Gobert.
I mean, they're not wrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're not wrong. But it's
he one got thing like about 30% of the votes.
Is he's a matchup in hell for Nurkic?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm going the Celtics. With that being said, but moving on now, we're going to start talking about the NFL draft that's going to be on Thursday night. Such a fun time, like we said, especially when guys from LSU are awaiting their name to be called.
Yep.
So first off, though, we're going to ask some easy questions just about the draft in general. Who goes number one come Thursday? This is kind of just a warm-up question, guys.
It's been Caleb Williams since
last year.
Started last year at USC. Yeah. Like, since he announced he was transferring to USC, he was going to be the number one overall pick. Like, anybody who says, oh, Caleb doesn't want to go to Chicago, that's not true.
I don't think so.
It's just not true. Like, he has no problems going to Chicago. Chicago actually had a really good offseason this year.
Keenan Allen, man.
They've had a couple of good off seasons now. It's Caleb Williams. And anybody who says it's not Caleb Williams hasn't been paying attention.
Yeah, it's Caleb Williams. If you say otherwise, you're just trying to be different.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like,
yeah, and I hate when people just – oh, he doesn't want to go here. Like,
look at the tape, man.
Just ask him, bro. Like, but it's going to be Caleb Williams. It's not
even if he didn't want to go. Boo hoo, bro. He's still going.
He could pull an Eli Manning.
Yeah, he could pull an Eli Manning.
Which that was insane.
That would be wild. But you don't see that a lot anymore. But I'm going Caleb Williams again. Like Andon said, Chicago's been making some
been quietly good,
pretty impressive moves in the offseason, kind of filling some holes. And if they make, you know, if they have a good draft similar to, you know, what Detroit did, I guess, a year ago, I think they could go and compete with teams really well. But who's a player that many people are high on in this draft, expected to be picked highly, but you just don't see it? You don't see it, and you think they're going to struggle with the transition?
I'm going to be the hot take in this room, so I'm going to let you guys go first because I've got probably the answer that you guys are going to like the least.
You want me to go?
I'll go. Okay. Mine is going to be J.J. McCarthy. Oh, wow. Sorry, man. But
no, you're okay.
I was talking to my homeboy yesterday, and we were like, I told him, I was like, dude, every time I see people talk about J.J. McCarthy and they have him super high in these mock drafts, I feel like it's this inside joke I'm just not in on.
Yeah, like, it's like, bro, what are you seeing?
I just don't understand. Like, I never like really disliked him at Michigan. Like I thought he was cool. You know what I mean?
Corny.
He got he the was job. Good. He was good for what they were doing.
Yeah, he got the job.
Great college quarterback. Like.
Right. Like, but in by no means does he belong in conversations with Caleb Williams, Jayden Daniels, Drake May. Yeah. I just don't see it, bro.
He's like a Stetson Bennett. Like, dude, he's a system guy that he was in college for so dang long,
and then got a Jeremy Lin run.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Just got really hot.
I mean, it just helped that he was giving the ball, you know, handing it off about 30 times a game.
Yeah.
And he got praised when he made a, you know, a few couple of good throws.
Yeah.
Down the stretch that helped him get to the championship. I think he's going to be awful. But what do you
say? Awful is crazy.
I'm going to say this one quietly because people are going to hate me for it. But
I'm getting nervous.
It's Jayden Daniels. It's coming. Oh, wow.
Malik Nabers won't be very good in the NFL, at least not to start. At least not to start. I think he's going to struggle from Jump Street because, one, I think if he ends up in New York, like people are saying, he's not going to be with a very good quarterback.
Yeah.
Secondly, I think he's going to have a very hard time adjusting to the physicality of NFL defensive backs.
Okay.
He's fast.
Smaller guy.
He's fast, but he's not big. And if you want to play as an ex-receiver in the NFL – you've got to have some physicality about
you. Like Jamar Chase.
Guys like Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson. Well,
just similar builds.
Run down the list. DeAndre Hopkins, Julio Jones, physically imposing guys who can jump out the gym and win 50-50 balls. Right. I'm not saying Malik Nabers can't win a 50-50 ball. I'm saying he's a little bit undersized to be an ex-wide receiver. If you start him in the slot, I think he'd have more success. But I think if he wants to play on the outside, he's going to have to either A, get bigger, or B, learn how to play with that physicality while still being undersized. So if we're looking at guys who are going to struggle off rip in the NFL, I know it sucks because he's an LSU guy, but I think Malik Nabers is really going to struggle.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, that is a curveball. But now opposite of that question, who's a player that you think might fall to the second day or even just late first round that may not be getting a lot of attention, but you think is going to be a really valuable asset for a team? And go make an immediate impact, I guess.
He'll probably be mid-first round.
Yeah.
I got to go with Brian Thomas Jr.
Damn.
Because of the same reasons that I think Malik Nabers is going to struggle. Because Brian Thomas, if you put up a silhouette of Brian Thomas, you would say that's an NFL wide receiver. He's
physical,
big. Yeah. He's tall. He's fast. He's strong. He's got a good release package. He's great in the air. I think he fits in immediately to an NFL, in the modern NFL, he fits into a modern NFL offense immediately. Day one, the second he shows up for OTAs, Brian Thomas is going to be a guy that jumps off the charts in camp. And I think he's going to have a huge rookie year. Okay. I think he'll be as far as production goes, I think he'll actually be miles ahead of every receiver except Marvin Harrison Jr. coming out in this class.
I'm going to have to go with another receiver, probably be taken in the second round. Mine is going to be Troy Franklin.
Okay.
Just because of the fact that you said a valuable asset, I think with the right coaching system, the right offensive system, I think he could be a really good guy. I think he could have some really big plays. He could be a guy to really spark the offense, get him going. His frame is very, 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 very slender, and I think that's what's causing him to
drop
in the draft boards. But
I don't think that. I mean, look at Devontae Smith, man. People always, you know.
Yeah, but Devontae Smith won a Heisman as a receiver.
Yeah.
So
I think it's a little bit different.
COVID.
Yeah, COVID.
All right, I guess.
COVID. He was great, but I think if it's a normal year and you got the West Coast guys playing a full year, I don't think you would have.
I'm going with my guy from Opelousas. Shout out to my guy, Keon Coleman. He's projected to go late first round, early second round, but I think he's one of the best receivers in this draft. When you look at the frame, like literally 6'4", freak athlete, jumps out the gym, like just incredible hands as well. Like his hand-eye coordination's ridiculous. But I think his height's going to force problems in the red zone, kind of similar like to what Brian Thomas can do. Mm-hmm. But he's just far more, in my opinion, a vertical threat than really anybody in this draft.
He has that mentality too. He's so good.
If you want me to give you a legitimate guy projected to go in the second round who I think is going to be really good, We go with Peyton Wilson, the linebacker from NC State.
Great pick.
Led the NCAA in tackles. He's a physical ball hunting presence. Yeah. Wherever the ball is, Peyton Wilson will be there soon after.
Butkus winner last
this year. Mock draft that I have him that I'm looking at right Texas. Now has him going 42 to Houston.
That would be
Playing for D'Amico Ryans would do him a hell of a lot of good for sure.
And I think that's
a defense where he can make an immediate impact because they need some linebacker help, especially on the interior linebacker spot. I think Peyton Wilson can have a huge NFL career.
Now that you're mentioning that, you know how scary that would be for other teams? If Houston
Christian
gets
Harris, Will
Peyton
Anderson,
Turner, dude. Oh my
Peyton
goodness.
Wilson.
I mean, Peyton.
Like,
sorry, Peyton
that's a scary defense.
Oh my
and
God,
then you look
yeah.
on the back end with Derek Stingley still roaming back there.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's a very, very dangerous defense.
So shifting, I know we're all Saints fans here. So shifting the Saints, they have currently the 14th pick. How do you think Mickey Loomis and the New Orleans Saints should go about their draft, first off, and then just who should New Orleans pick with that 14th pick?
Jaden Daniels.
I mean, he's
I mean,
falling.
You should try for sure, but
he's not falling.
He ain't falling that low.
No. It'll probably be some lineman out of some school up north like they always do.
Yeah.
It won't be a quarterback, I can tell you that for sure.
Right.
Olufoshinu is the answer. Tackle from Penn State. Nice. At least that's the pick I'm going to go with. I think that Ryan Ramczyk is done.
Right.
The Saints have actually kind of found something in Andres Pete playing left tackle. Mm-hmm. I think they go guard late to replace James Hurst, who played left guard a lot this year. And I think that your offensive line will be Pete, whoever you draft or pick up in free agency to play left guard, Eric McCoy, Cesar Ruiz, and Olufoshinu. And I think that he's a very talented physical presence, and he will eventually play left tackle for you whenever you decide that he's ready to do that. But that's a guy who already has the refined skill set that Trevor Penning never had and never developed. You drafted him saying, all right, he's a physical monster, but he's undisciplined and he doesn't have the tools yet.
Yeah.
And you never taught him the tools. So now he's just a big guy with no idea of what's going on and playing left tackle. And that's why he's not playing left tackle for you right now. Fashanu comes in with a package. He comes in with all the physical tools. And he's a guy who could step in day one and maybe not play blindside tackle, but he could certainly play right tackle for a team that really, really, really needs one.
Yeah, I like that pick. I'm going to go with J.C. Latham from Alabama.
I like J.C. Latham.
I think, like you said, they just need to fill Ramczyk. It sucks for the Saints, too, because this is a draft where they really needed to go offensive line no matter what, but they also need a defensive line as far as depth. And if Jared Verse is available, I think you can't be opposed to it, to picking him, because, I mean, an athlete like that, falling mid-round like that.
That's
I feel
a
like
gift.
That's exactly it. Like you really can't pass up on that opportunity. And then you have to think long-term. You know, how long is Cameron Jordan going to be there for you? So I think, like, obviously they're going to go and pick some defensive linemen. But as far as decision-making, that's what it's going to come down to.
I think that another option, if you want to go tackle in the first round, is Talese Fuaga. From Oregon State, another guy who's just a physical mauler.
Great
run blocker. I am on the record that if you want to draft a guy on the interior, you should probably look for the Polynesian guys because they are physical monsters. Vita Vea, Penei Sewell, all those guys are just dogs.
Studs.
They're studs, and they play with such a physicality while also being very disciplined and very intelligent. And I think Fuaga has that as well. I was super impressed by his tape at Oregon State, just his physicality, not only in pass pro, but also as a run blocker in an offense that probably is going to look to run the ball a lot more this season are the New Orleans Saints. I think that you can't go wrong with any of the three tackles we named. If Fashanu comes to you at 14, you should take him. Fuaga is also a good option. So is J.C. Latham. But you have to go tackle. Tackle is the A1 position of need for this Saints team that, honestly, I think if things break for them the right way, could win anywhere from 10 to 12 games in what I think is a very weak NFC South, if I'm being honest. So I just think that tackle is the A1. We got to get a guy in the room right now to figure this out.
Yeah, now moving on to the LSU guys, Jaden Daniels, elephant in the room. This is kind of more of an easier one too, but what team do you think he ends up landing with Thursday night?
I hope it's not Washington, because if it is, I see RG3 all over him. And it just makes me incredibly sad, because like I can see it now, him on that terrible field at FedEx and something bad happening. And I pray to God that that doesn't happen, because Jaden Daniels is a stellar talent. I just think Washington right now is a boat without a captain. It's a ship without a sail. And they are just kind of sitting there in this continual purgatory of NFL football. And I think that it's a terrible landing spot for Jaden Daniels. I don't think New England is necessarily a better spot, but he's probably going to end up number two overall to Washington. And, man, that scares the hell out of me, dude. I can't even lie to you. I can't.
Yeah. I also have D.C. But.
Yeah. I think it'll be the Commanders, but I hope Las Vegas makes some moves, you know, shake something up, yeah, trades cool. up to get him.
Yeah.
I think I'd much rather him go over there. And I agree. I do think he wants to be back on the West Coast.
With, you know, his former coach as right. well. Yeah, I agree. But I know you just mentioned RG3, but what player comp would you give him?
On the positive side?
Yeah. I mean, there's...
I think the closest one is probably Lamar.
Yeah.
Just from a physical tools perspective. Jaden's a little bit smaller than Lamar Jackson is, but... they're both incredibly shifty and incredibly nimble, and they're also incredibly ferocious runners as well, as far as they're not afraid to get hit. They're not afraid to go into contact, and I think that that's a style of play that you have to watch in the NFL, right. but right. I think that Jaden enters the NFL with a much deeper knowledge of the passing game than Lamar Jackson had at Louisville. I think that's the closest one, just because there's not many guys like Jaden Daniels that have ever come into the NFL.
Yeah.
He's a very unique sort of athlete. I think Lamar is probably the closest one, but even that one still has some iffy bits to it.
Yeah. Not only is it the closest, I think it's also just kind of the most obvious. I mean,
right.
like you said, there's only been so many guys with even that type of play style to come through the NFL. And the NFL has been around for
over
a century, bro. Yeah. So I think the obvious answer is Lamar Jackson. I do think Lamar he's definitely faster. And I think he's a little bit more of a refined runner, mm-hmm. better understands of when not to take contact. And that's something I'm sure Jaden will have to get better with. But I think the obvious answer is Lamar.
Yeah, as far as, like, passing, I'm going to say Lamar, but, like, just kind of, like, just pocket, you mm-hmm. know, staying in the pocket and stuff like that. But I really feel like his running, like, more of a running approach, I would say Michael Vick, just the way that he's so shifty and made so many people miss with the speed. But mm-hmm. I think way better Vick, to be honest. I think Jaden Daniels is going to have a really successful career in the NFL. But moving on to Malik Nabers. Lots of teams in the need who are in the need for a wide receiver.
Yes.
So where do you think that Nabers lands?
I think he either goes 5 to the Chargers or 6 to the Giants, one of those two, depending on whether the Chargers like Rome Odunze more or whether they like Malik Nabers more. And like I said, I think he has a much better time fitting in with Justin Herbert, and that Jim Harbaugh offense, he'll have a much better time. I think him going to New York is sort of a minor death sentence for him, just because
bad news bears.
They don't look like they have a real direction right now. LA is probably the most likely. I think he'll go before Rome Odunze, but. Like I said, I have my apprehension about Malik Nabers as an NFL receiver.
Yeah, lots of speculation, though, that, you know, Minnesota might be trading for that pick at 5 for a quarterback.
Crazy.
That might happen, might not.
I just don't know who they would take.
Player comp, though. I was going to ask you for your player comp real quick.
If we're talking current NFL players, he reminds me
of... It doesn't have to be current.
He reminds me a little bit of Brandon Ayuk. Just when he beat you downfield, you're done. There's no way for you to catch up. He's got great release packages. It's just the size that worries me. Yeah. But Malik Nabers, as far as he's got solid hands. He doesn't have great hands, but he's got solid hands. He's a great route runner. He's very disciplined in his routes. Mm-hmm. He's got a full tree that he can run. Yep. It's just the size that worries me. Yep. But I think Brandon Ayuk has done a great job carving himself out, especially how he gets involved in the run game a lot for San Francisco. So if Malik can end up in an offense where he can do some of those things and maybe be more of a gadget guy while he develops those physical tools, I think he'll have a much better time.
Mine is going to be Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, their ability to take the ball from the line of scrimmage all the way to the end zone, there's not many receivers I've seen do that better than they do it. And also, Ja'Marr is listed at 6'2", 201, and Malik is listed at 6'2", 200. I mean, there was a side-by-side of, like, their body measurements, their vertical, their 40 time. I mean, he's almost a carbon copy of Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not too worried about the size thing. I mean, we'll just have to see it when it gets here. The NFL is a whole different ball game. But as far as play style, man, body frame, body build, speed, the ability to go from 0 to 60 in the snap of a finger, bro, I think it's easily Ja'Marr Chase.
Okay. I'm going to say Steve Smith Sr.
Ooh.
That's a guy that could really just turn it on, the Jets. And then his routes were very underrated as far as Steve Smith. But I also agreed, as far as like physical wise, it's Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah.
Both guys have a very similar, just like you said, build.
Yeah.
You know, I think Ja'Marr is a little more muscular than Malik is, but I think he's going to get bigger over time. But
they
got some fat calf muscles too, bro.
That is
I love that Steve Smith comparison, just from a technician perspective, because both of them are elite route runners. Like, there's a reason Steve Smith used to tell people to ice up, because your ankles were in for a rough day when you were up against Steve Smith. Yeah. And I think Malik Nabers is very similar.
Yeah, it takes a lot of, I guess, just patience and just like physical, like mental strength to go up against a guy like Malik Nabers, who has so many routes and you really don't know what to expect from him. But finally, we have Brian Thomas, an elite vertical threat that helped LSU's offense last year. Projected to go late first round right now, maybe middle. But that 4.3440 dash
made him a lot of money, dude. Yeah. Gave him a first round draft grade.
Exactly. So where could you see him landing? This is a more interesting thing, because teams really don't know right now.
Yeah.
I have him late first round. I have him around that Arizona 27, Buffalo 28 spot. Yeah. Teams that are kind of looking for a wide receiver. I do think that the Cardinals are probably going to go with Marv at four, which I think takes them out of BTJ at 27.
Yeah.
I think Buffalo is a perfect landing spot for him. After you get rid of Stephon Diggs, and you're looking for sort of the next guy for Josh Allen, I think that, man, there's few better than Brian Thomas Jr. And I've got a comparison for him. I'm going to let you guys give your grade, but I've got a comparison for him that special.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was going to say Buffalo, just from the standpoint of you just got rid of your number one receiver. And Brian Thomas Jr. has wide receiver number one written all over him, if you ask me. I mean, he has great size, great hands, ridiculous speed, especially for somebody his size. And I think he can become a more refined route runner,
I think
level.
They're going to probably get him better.
Absolutely. So I would have to go with BT, man. And you got a great quarterback who would be throwing you the ball. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to say either Buffalo or give me the Indianapolis Colts. I think they're in need of a wide receiver.
Him opposite Michael Pittman would be nasty.
Two really large guys, which I don't know. You know, I think they would be able to play. You know, I think they're two similar guys as far as play styles. But
I think, when I think of two guys that are pretty similar in their skill set, and these guys aren't the same, but they're pretty similar, I always think of Mike Evans and Chris Godwin.
I agree.
Two guys that are both very physical receivers.
Yeah.
Godwin's got a little bit more straight line speed than Mike Evans does, but they figured out a way to play together that fits both of them very well.
I think they could make that work.
I think Pittman and Brian Thomas could do that as
Especially for Anthony Richardson, who's now going to be healthy. But player comp. I know you were excited about this one.
On the low end, I'm going to ignore the low end. On the low end, he's a guy like George Pickens who can just play 50-50 balls. On the high end, if everything goes the right way, he could be Julio Jones. I really do think. I really do think he could be Julio, man. Because Julio is just a
vertical.
When people ask me who's the best wide receiver I've ever seen live in person in the flesh, my answer is Julio Jones because he was the most physically gifted person on the field at all times. You could have put that dude on the field with an Olympian, and Julio Jones was the best athlete on the field. And he was such a good technician as well, and he was so good in the air, and he was sneaky fast. And I think those are all things that Brian Thomas is as well. I think on the high end, when you give him a guy like Josh Allen, he could be the next Julio Jones. I really do.
I love that comparison. I have the same thing. But the one-on-one catching, that's where it like – and just when you look at prime Julio, you look at the separation. And that's what you see from Brian Thomas in a lot of these LSU games.
He just gets
where
free.
He just burns guys in the secondary. Yeah. But I think he's going to be an elite receiver.
Everybody. You don't seem to be as high on him as we are, Jaden.
Not Julio Jones. It's not that I'm not high.
Think he's Julio.
No, I'm just – that's a lot to ask for. That's
oh, absolutely.
No,
yeah.
So it's just – I don't know.
I'm saying, peak, if it were.
At his best?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
At his best.
I mean, sure. Like, the build is there. I think Julio ran like a 4.35 at his pro day. Mm-hmm. So I definitely understand that comparison. But mine is – I'm going to take it back a little bit. Mine is going to have to be Mike Wallace, a guy that could blow right past you. Very good vertical threat, very good deep threat. He reminds me so much of Mike Wallace.
I like
somebody
that's
just always open down the field.
Another guy that I'll give a shout out to, a little bit different style. I think Brian Thomas is much more of a deep ball 50-50 threat. Marcus Colston, as far as like a big physical guy who has the tools to get downfield but can also work in the intermediates. I think Marcus Colston is another great comp there.
Even like Sammy Watkins a little bit. But like a way better Sammy Watkins.
Oh, I mean, Sammy Watkins Sammy Watkins was very good.
No, he was very good for a while. And then injuries really hurt.
Yeah.
But it is now time for the best segment of the week. It is time to give our poo-poo-poo start of the week.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, hold on. A little delayed, but... Worst performance of the week, you know the deal by now. Player, coach, fan base, owner, anyone, refs, could be anyone.
Yeah.
What are we going with, Jaden?
Officiating / NBA. And it's going to be from the Knicks-Sixers game.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because the NBA just came out and admitted that Tyrese Maxey did get fouled on the inbound play last night. And it's not the fact that they got it wrong, but it's the fact that you have the audacity to come out and say,
right after.
We got it wrong, but there's nothing we can do about it.
And I just think that's the first game, too.
Like, if I'm a Sixers fan, what am I supposed to do with that? What am I supposed to do with you acknowledging you were wrong if the result is already final, bro? Like, that does nothing for me. Oh, thanks. You realize I was right all along. Thanks.
Yeah, I think the last two-minute reports are the dumbest thing that the NBA publishes.
Bro.
I agree. So
it just feels like a slap in the face. So, NBA, Adam Silver, you are my poo-poo start of the week.
Want me to go,
Andy? No, you're going to go last because I think you have the best one.
Okay.
But I'm going to go to the world of Formula One, of which I am, I think, the only guy on the sports staff who is big into
Formula One.
But yes, shout out Frisha. The Chinese Grand Prix was this past weekend, and there was a few safety cars during the race. Which basically means that all the cars kind of have to slow down because there's something on the track that makes them have to slow down.
Yeah, like after a wreck or something.
Yes. So we're about to restart the race after the first safety car. And there's this hairpin right turn at the Shanghai circuit. And Fernando Alonso locks up his brakes, which starts a braking chain all the way to the back of the field.
Oof. Oh, no.
So here's where this gets bad.
How many cars?
Not where Fernando Alonso. Everybody brakes. Everybody's focused and locked in, you know, because you make millions of dollars to drive these beautiful beasts of cars. Like Formula One cars are majestic and also terrifying.
Yeah.
But everybody's locked in and focused because it's your job.
Yeah.
everybody except Fernando Alonso's teammate, Lance Stroll. Lance Stroll is looking somewhere else. I don't know where he's looking, but in this braking chain, Lance Stroll does not realize that it is his turn to brake and goes directly into the back of Daniel Ricciardo, who then goes into the back of Oscar Piastri. Daniel Ricciardo has to retire. Dang. Oscar Piastri ends up in eighth place. Lance Stroll ends up close to the back of the pack. After the race, they ask Lance, what happened there? And he claims, in front of God and everybody, that Daniel Ricciardo brake checked him. Says Daniel Ricciardo brake checked him. So they go talk to Daniel Ricciardo. Danny, what happened there? That Lance says you brake checked him. And Danny Rick's face just drops. Did he really say that? And Daniel Ricciardo was pissed. He goes, I looked at his onboard camera. He wasn't even looking at me. Lance Stroll, wow. For your continued ignorance behind the wheel of a Formula One car, for your daddy's money in that Aston Martin seat, you should not be there, and every driver on the grid knows you shouldn't be there. Lance Stroll, for your wreck at the Shanghai Grand Prix, you are my poo-poo Broussard this week. I get air horns?
Yeah, you get the air horn because that was pretty good. But mine's so simple. This week, I'll have to give it to our old good buddy pal.
Our good pal and Anthony Davis.
Browse Davis of the Los Angeles Lakers. Earlier this week, made a comment complaining about not being a semifinalist for the Defensive Player of the Year. Said, I'm never going to win one of these ever. And that's just something he had to, you know, kind of just come into terms with. Yeah. And so last night, at the time of recording right now, he gave up a game-winning buzzer beater to Jamal Murray, hit an absolutely crazy shot. And this was kind of just better shot than just bad defense. Yeah, yeah. But I think it was just so ironic that he said that a few days ago about, you know, not
I think it was the day before, actually.
Yeah,
yeah, it was the day before.
And in a press conference, they asked him, yeah, and, you know, Anthony, what happened on that last drive? You know, take us through, you know, did you get screened? You know, why did you go on Jamal Murray? He goes up to the, in his little, you know, his little glasses, they look like hippie glasses, not really, but he goes, Jamal made a shot, threw the mic down, left the press conference, and that was it.
So, he literally goes, Jamal Murray made a shot, doesn't set it down, doesn't slam it down, throws it, and walks off.
So, Anthony Davis, even though you are a reason why the Lakers are pretty much good,
And even though he probably should win a defensive player of the year,
it is true. The irony and just the timing of this makes me say, Anthony Davis, congratulations on your first poo-poo Broussard of the week. But that is going to do it for us here today. Big thank you to Andon and Jayden for joining me as always.
AD got a poo-poo Broussard before he got a defensive player of the year.
That's crazy, bro. He probably doesn't even know that. But I'm Andre Champagne.
Definitely doesn't know that.
And this has been the Hodges Huddle.